Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium Miguel. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And Del Torre.
Same corner, same time, man. Peak summer vibes. How y'all boys feeling? Y'all good?
Nick?
I feel great.
Yeah.
Had a relaxing weekend with a significant other. Had some mimosas yesterday, kicked back, a little brunch vibes.
Mimosa, oh, man.
Some avocado toast and mimosa. Big,
oh man,
big Becky Karen vibes yesterday.
I can see that. Who'd you yell at? Did you go to the store and just yell at a random manager?
No, fought the urge.
Yeah,
fought the urge to ask for the manager.
What's your brunch gear look like? You got your shorts below above the knees.
Oh, listen. I mean, we're going 5-inch shorts.
Yeah,
there's skies out, thighs out.
Skies out, thighs out, baby.
Thank you, Manscaped, later in the ad, but you know, no Hairy Larry.
No Hairy Larry, man. It's no summer, peak summer, man. You gotta keep your shade.
Yeah. Had some red shorts on, white shirt.
There you go.
Sunglasses. Mm. She wanted to eat outside. It was 11 o'clock, already 98 degrees.
Ooh, bold move.
Not a chance. Said not a chance. Bold we're going inside.
I like it. Yeah, it's definitely eat inside weather.
Yeah, there's nothing outside weather right now.
Nick, you might have said it. Where did you eat?
It's called That Bar and Table. It used to be Lucy's.
Very good. I'll have to give it a shot. Next time. So I am not well, gentlemen.
I'm unwell.
Yeah, I went hard pause this weekend. I had a big charity event that I love going to every year. It's a gala event. It raises money for the Moffitt Cancer Center here in town.
Mafia Cancer Center.
Yeah. Yep.
It's called big, Mafia?
Cancer Research Hospital here.
Oh, I ain't never heard of Mafia.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a dope name. I like it.
Yeah. So they have, there's a group that puts on an event that raises money for them. I bought tickets for that a few months ago, maybe a couple weeks after I bought tickets. My buddy Paul, everybody loves Paul from the timeline, text me. He's like, hey, boy. All right. Hey, buddy. Our boys are playing. Whiskey Myers, a big country music band that we like, are playing in St. Augustine this day. Do you want to go? Like, sure. Let's get tickets. He bought me tickets. A couple months go by. I'm writing down my plan and schedule. I'm like, oh, shoot. That's the same weekend. So I have to go big formal gathering Saturday night. Wake up, drive my hopefully not too hungover ass up to Gainesville or up to St. Augustine, and then just get back at it Sunday night. So in traditional Dan Bender vibes, get up there, have a blast last night, get it rained on a little bit in St. Augustine. That's okay. Have an elite time. But then driving back today, it all just kind of hit me. I'm just not as young as I used to be anymore. So it's going to be one that I kind of struggle through today.
The ride home from the Benders be a lot of self-reflecting.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, Brooke's sleeping in the car. It's just me and the road, and you start to self-evaluate a little bit more. But you're right. But you have to do it, right? You only get the chance to do this once. So shout out to Whiskey Myers. Shout out to Shane Smith and the Saints. Elite performance last night.
Shout out to Paul, man. Paul got the rawest, toughest, best seafood boil I ever had at a tailgate, man. Paul gets busy.
He's going to be doing that at the LSU game again this year. He's bringing a 100-quart cooker with him. He said he's going to get up there Friday morning, and he's just going to set himself up on the lawn there at the University of Florida for 2 days and just cookout. So all are welcome, I guess.
That is, I might need to hook him up with my buddy, Zach from LSU. He is a big LSU fan. I met him through Richard Johnson. Shout out to Richard. Just got honored with the Ed Ashoff Rising Star Award from the Football Writers Association of America. Nice. Couldn't imagine another person Ed would want to win the award other than Richard. So shout out to him. But I met Zach through Richard, and he does that, like what Paul is talking about doing, every LSU home game. And he said this year he wants to take it on the road. And I was like, listen, you give me some of that gumbo, some of that jambalaya that you spend 48 hours cooking that I had in Baton Rouge, and you can stay at my house.
Yeah, we got the same corner and the same time. You can do that at too, man. We can throw out – if you want to come do some tailgate vibes with a seafood boy, man, he got free taste testers.
Yeah, all day.
All day.
Man, so how was your weekend? Go ahead, Nick.
No, go ahead, Sup.
I just want to ask what weekend was.
I vibed out, man. Worked at the Kush House. We had an interview on the Roll Up Guys and crew. We had an interview with Preston Parker, former Delray Atlantic, Florida State wide receiver. Was electric at this time. Short stint at Florida State. Yeah, we did 3 years, but he got kicked out for some and joined the North Alabama crew with Janoris. Out of that 5'6" to Big Three to North Alabama vibes. But a great conversation, some great storytelling. And after that, man, I just chilled. I hung out. Spent some time, more time in the Kush. I was getting things together, getting the studio in order for the fall, organized some things, hung out with my son. Went and checked out Crystal Shop and did some rendezvousing around Orlando with him and then made it back home, man. That's it. That's the vibes. Just work. It's my birthday week, man, so I'm about to relax.
Yeah, man, happy birthday. Happy early birthday. Happy early birthday.
Thanks, man.
It's your big Sean Kemp year, right?
Sean Kemp year, baby. 40, man. Big 40. So just relaxing, man, trying to get, you know, things in order as much as I can before the weekend because I'm unplugged. I don't have any crazy big plans, but I don't want to be on none of the apps. I just want to be off the grid, man, you know?
Just enjoy, my friend.
For sure.
Well, happy early birthday to you. We got a good show for you guys this week. We had the chance to interview Todd Golden last week, so we'll insert that interview in. Really good conversation with him, new Florida Gators basketball coach. And then we're going to dive into some of the other big issues that are that we're encountering in the Florida Gator fan base, whether it's recruiting, whether it's number changes and all that. But we've got a good, exciting episode for you. But as we always do, we want to give a shout-out to our friend Alan Horn with Alan Horn Insurance for being the title sponsor of Stadium Miguel. Alan is located up there in Jasper, Georgia. So if you live in Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, or Alabama, and you are looking for auto, home, renters, life insurance, business insurance, retirement planning, whatever the case may be, visit him at 706-692-2888 or alanhorninsurance.com. Again, that's Alan Horn, A-L-A-N-H-O-R-N-E, insurance.com or 706-692-2888. Gentlemen, we do have some new numbers in Florida Gator Nation this week that were announced, but the probably the biggest news that fans clamored over with late last week was Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver transfer from Arizona State, grabbing that number one jersey. Any thoughts on that? Were you surprised?
I was surprised, yeah. I don't know how far Billy's you know, how serious he's taking the number one in the tradition of it. But traditionally, he's the best player on the team. I don't know if Ricky Pearsall is that. I would like to see AR in it, but the player got to actually want to wear number one as well. But, yeah, it does raise some eyebrows. But just talking to some guys on the team, they say he is looking good. Could take the roof off the defense. Doing his thing in workouts, but I don't know, man.
Talking to some guys on the team, a lot of guys weren't feeling it. And it's because I mean, did it start with Urban really the number one?
It probably started before that. I would say it probably started in the early 2000s, right around like the Keewon Ratliff time, because you know
Urban made it a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the best player award, but I think Urban like officially made it a thing when he got there, made it a reward.
You had to earn it.
Right.
Like Janoris Jenkins didn't come in from JUCO wearing, or not Janoris, Reggie Nelson didn't come in from JUCO wearing number one.
Right.
He had a number and then showed he was a baller and got number one. Not to sound like Dan Mullen, Percy Harvin wore number eight. Bernard Hargreaves had an egregious 16 on his back for one game. I think I don't know how important jersey numbers are. Like, obviously, the number one as a head coach, you probably have 30 guys outside your door that all want that number. Maybe it was Billy's way of being like, "Hey, I don't want" to make numbers a big deal. We'll just give it to the kid that wants it, that just got here, sure. But it's one that I kind of liked. I kind of liked the – you had to earn number one. If you're a Florida fan and you're looking down the field and you see someone wearing number one, you, like, mentally put a note in your head, like, hey, that's a dude. That's someone I should be watching today.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Ricky Pearsall? I don't know. Does Florida know? Yep. Probably not, because they're not really doing anything really football right now.
Right, right.
So I think that, to me, was the surprising one.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know what the number means. I don't know if that's a tradition that's being carried over or not. Was a little surprising. Also, it could be a little bit much to do about nothing. You know, we also don't know how many players pined for that jersey number. Certainly, it's something that maybe they wanted, but also maybe they were, pretty happy. There was only four number changes overall. Only a couple of them were on the offensive side of the ball as it was. So at the end of the day, maybe it's not a number that anybody – I'm not saying that anybody didn't want it, but I'm also not sure, you know, if there's necessarily always a huge fight over it, or certainly it might not have been a thing. There could have been other, you know, factors that came into that as well, from a leadership perspective, maybe a recruiting perspective for him as well. Right? Who knows? So he's certainly interesting, but definitely that is not the guy that I thought would have – the number one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who would you have it right now?
If not AR, nobody in my mind right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you maybe one of the running backs wanted it, right? And we'll talk about that here in a second. But I don't know of anybody that's truly deserving on the offensive side of the ball besides maybe Anthony Richardson for that number.
Yeah, and you know, he's moving away from the AR-15 nickname, but I don't think he was looking for a jersey number swap.
Who was it? Harrison that told us he liked the the number one air if AR were to switch.
Yeah, I would have liked that Brandon move as well. That was pretty slick. How do you guys feel about him moving? We talked about it, I think, before. Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel about him moving away from that moniker?
From a marketing standpoint, it's probably just smart business.
Yeah.
Unless you were going to get the AR money, the NRA money.
I don't know what value in these times you have with keeping that branding. I know it's unfortunate, but certainly it shows a lot of maturity in my perspective from his camp and from him making that decision. Right now we live in very sad and unfortunate times where that's not even something that we can use lightly or use in a different way. So I do applaud him for doing that. Did wonder if that would come with a number change and maybe a completely new rebrand. But ultimately I do applaud him for the maturity of making that change, in this day and age.
I feel like they took Auntie Mama off of syrup.
Yeah, I mean it's unfortunate, right? Because I mean we talked about how kind of perfectly it fit, right? A couple years ago, and then obviously NIL and everything else. But to be able to see the forest through the trees and be able to think of the bigger issue at hand rather than just your personal branding, I think that shows a lot of maturity for AR.
For sure.
Let's see. In other name changes, Naquan Wright goes from number six down to number five. Chief Borders changes from number 36 to number 14. Dejon Reynolds goes from 81 to 8, and then Jordan Young goes from 31 to 11. Any thoughts on any of those?
Well, I like 31. I didn't mind 31. I think that's a good DB number. Shout out to Cody Riggs.
Yeah.
I like 11 better. Looks sexier on in Georgia.
We called whoever were 11 was sticks when we played baseball. Right.
Okay. I like that.
I do not like 14. 14 from 36 to 14.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a number upgrade. You know, if you're a backup quarterback, right? You're a walk-on, maybe you get that scholarship, you go from 36 to 14. I'm just not sure I jump out seeing a 14 linebacker number, you know?
Definitely a walk-on number.
Alex McAllister?
Was that? I thought Alex McAllister was 16.
13. He was 13. Mm-hmm. No, what was McAllister? Mm-hmm. He was 13.
He was 16.
No, that was Chapadan. Was 13.
The Chapadan was 13. Well, McAllister never wore 13.
They're on the same team. They're on the same team.
He was number 14. You're right, Nick. Boom. Wow.
Listen, bro, I know my numbers. I'm here for the was it a number upgrade or downgrade?
Me and Dan didn't remember it. So,
yeah.
Points still proven. We didn't even remember what numbers
were. All right, Nick. I think going from number 6 to number 5 for Naquan Wright, that's a number upgrade.
I would say it's a push.
I like a push.
So I'm gonna go with
single digits. Most likely gonna be pushing unless you like 9 or something ugly like that. I don't like 9 or 8. Good? I'm cool on 9. It's not bad, but I'm just cool on it.
So we said 36 to 14 is a downgrade.
In my opinion,
the Chief. I mean, so like Chiefs playing like outside.
I like 30, a 51. You know, 30, like a 53. Yeah,
30, no. So Chiefs more. He's playing like outside linebacker. He's playing like edge. So like 36 is to me is a DB. Yeah, no, just a DB or maybe like
a specialist,
a fullback. How dare you? Specialist should get first pick of numbers.
Yeah,
14 is a. I think 14 is a better number for his position, but still not a good number.
All specialists should have numbers in the 40s. So 81 to 8, I'm going to go push. I like the number 81 for a wide receiver, but maybe I'm just a little old school with the NFL, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go downgrade. I think 8's a better number, but I don't know.
81. I like Chad Jackson. I like got 81. Some Chad Jackson vibes to it. I'm not mad at 8. I wouldn't personally want to wear, but I do. 81 was Callaway, but I like a single digit over the 80s, man, unless you want to be a wide receiver from the 90s.
If we're keeping it a buck, 81 was Chico.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a good point. And then 31 down to 11.
I'd say upgrade, even though I like 31 better. I like the number 31, but
you just like it because Cody Riggs wore it and he went to
St. Thomas.
That's St. Pride.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really like the ugly-ass number, man.
Speaking of ugly numbers, and I can say this. So my hockey number for a long time was number 29.
Ew.
New transfer wide receiver, Ty Bowman.
Not good. Growing
up, the number 29.
Not good.
Yeah. Over, under, one catch on the season, wearing the number 29.
I get big Gunner vibes. Big
special teams.
If you're not going to look at film, if you're not going to – if you purely just want to scratch the surface, if I'm a receiver and I transfer to a school and they hand me 29, I'm like, damn, I picked the wrong school.
Bro, and then the other transfer that came in with you got the number one.
Yeah, right? You're like, yo, I definitely got the wrong school.
You have to know where you sit right then, right?
Like maybe I should have been a Mac.
It's different transfer. One's coming from – didn't he come from JUCO? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested in that kid though. I want to see and follow him in camp. I wasn't mad at his film. I think he brings something different in our wide receiver room.
Don't walk away from the TV on punt team and kickoff. Then you'll see him.
He turns slandering a kid. He's barely even put the jersey on.
You ain't hearing good things or something? What you hearing?
Nah, I'm just strictly off of getting the number 29.
Oh, sometimes they just hand out numbers, man. He'll figure it out once he get here. They probably promised Ricky something in recruiting. He was more coveted.
Yeah, bag and a number now.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're transferring in the portal. You can talk bags in the portal. You're not a high school recruit. What we got?
Yeah, just looking to see if there's any other number changes. Couldn't really see or anything else that we could talk about numbers related. I know that certainly that's not the most elite content in the world. Who was your favorite off the top of your head? Do you guys have any players that wore unique numbers that you thought really fit them or, you know, stood out despite it being a very odd number. Somebody in the chat says Antonio Morrison, number 12. That was certainly something.
At the time, John Bostic wearing number one.
That was crazy.
Was crazy because, like, linebackers weren't really wearing those kind of numbers. He also was massive and, like, number kind of just got, like, lost on him. I love any big man with a small number. So, like, when
Easily
Carlos Dunlap in eight.
When Easily switched down to two, I thought that was wild. Yeah, so there's any big guy with a small number. Like, give me a nose tackle wearing zero. I'm all about it.
I like that. So I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that really kind of stuck out. I liked, and it's not a number you see often, but my boy Jermaine Cunningham. I think he was number 49.
40. Yeah, I was about to say 44 with Orr. I thought was different too.
We need to get Jermaine on the show. Him and I used to be boys back in the day. Me, him, Will Hill, and Dee Finley used to go bowling.
Oh, that's together. That was a crew. Now we know why they got in shit.
Yeah, yeah.
How did Dan sneak into that crew?
That's a wild crew, man.
That's a group to put together. Hell yeah. Oh, man.
Shout out to Dee Finley, man.
Jermaine Cunningham was cool. Him and Dustin Doe were roommates, like freshman summer B, and they live right across from my best friend. We had some great stories. But Jermaine Cunningham's actually part of the reason I got a job working at the UF recruiting department. We were talking after he was maybe in the weight room and I was walking to class and we were just chatting and Emily Heater walked up to him and then we started talking and long story short, you know, a couple weeks later, I got a job working in the football recruiting office. So shout out to him. Why don't we do this? Why don't we let the listeners listen to our Todd Golden interview, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit of recruiting because I know that there's a lot of stuff that folks want to talk about there. But before we do that, Silk, why don't you do a Grahamco ad read for our Todd Golden interview?
Absolutely. Be sure to visit thegrahamco.com. Use coupon code SG25 for gummies, Wake and Bake coffee, pre-roll, sativa doll products. Those gummies come in three flavors, by the way, blue raspberry, fruit punch, and watermelon. And they also have a hard candy now, and it's tropical orange. Very good. More like a Jolly Rancher type feel. But everything's federally legal to your mailbox in discreet packaging. Sativa Doll products is on a different website. You can visit them on sativadoll.com. And Grahamco takes care of everything from seed all the way to packaging. So you know your source and exactly where your product is coming from. Like I said, be sure to visit thegrahamco.com. Use coupon code SG25 at checkout for 25% off.
And we are joined today, and we are very excited for this interview with new Florida Gators basketball coach Todd Golden. Todd, how have the last few months been for you in Gainesville?
Been pretty dang good, man. It's been a blast being on the ground here. Obviously, everything happened pretty quick in terms of the transition and, you know, finishing up our season out in San Francisco and then trying to hit the ground running here in Gainesville. But it's flown by. You know, we're about 5 weeks into our summer program now with most of our team here on campus and feel like we're in a pretty good spot, all things considered.
Awesome, man. Well, we want to get obviously into your time here at UF and then what the first 5 weeks or so have looked like. But want to ask you a little bit about, you know, how you got to this point in your career. Grew up in beautiful Arizona, played basketball at St. Mary's College there in California, where you obviously did quite well. I saw that you had the all-time leader in free throw percentage when you were there. Unfortunately broken by Matthew Dellavedova, but had a great career there. And then you went over to Israel to play professional basketball. So tell us a little bit about kind of your story and how you got into basketball and then, you know, your college and professional and playing career.
Yeah. You know, I got in, you know, got into basketball and playing ball at an early age. My father played freshman basketball at UMass back in the day. And so, you know, growing up in Phoenix, really just it was part of my life, you know, from a very early age. And, you know, always I played multiple sports, you know, I played baseball growing up as well. And so I never really specialized in it, but it was usually what I was most passionate in. And then really when I got into high school, I was just super fortunate to have a really good high school coach, Dan Mannix. And kind of gave me the confidence and the belief that I could become a Division I player. And so, you know, being in that program and having a lot of success, I think we went 76-12 in my 3 years there. We won a lot of games and won a state championship and gained a lot of, you know, toughness and grit and just a good understanding of what it would take as a very under-talented athlete to be at the Division I level. But, you know, again, fortunate to at that point to be seen by both Randy Bennett and Kyle Smith on the AU circuit. I played one summer with the Arizona Stars, which would have, you know, their Nike team. They would have been on the EYBL if this was, you know, this year. And they were actually recruiting one of my teammates pretty heavily. And they saw me and they're like, man, this kid has a chance, but didn't feel like he was ready for a scholarship. So I walked on there at first, but I carved out a role pretty quick and, you know, started for three seasons there. Played in two NCAA tournaments and just had a really, really good experience. And I feel like both having Dan Mannix and then playing for Randy and Kyle, it really gave me a great foundation for understanding the game and really kind of having a passion for it.
There was some guy named Patty Mills, I think, showed up, which allowed you to change positions. How much did that, I guess, help you get recognized and then help you get to playing professionally in Israel?
You know, it's a great question. I remember going into my fifth year at St. Mary's, Coach Bennett and Kyle called me in the office and they were, you know, this was after the first month or two on campus and Patty had been there and really, you know, we could tell pretty quick that he was a dang good player. And so, you know, I remember Randy's like, hey, Todd, you know, what position do you envision yourself playing this year for us? And I said, Coach, I'll be honest, you know, I enjoy playing point guard, but if that's what Patty's playing, then I'm more than happy to slide over to the two and take on that responsibility and that role. And, you know, Patty, you know, his presence gave me the ability to be a much more efficient player. Obviously, he played point, handled most of the ball handling duties that year, allowed me to slide off the ball and be more of a catch and shoot guy and more of a secondary ball handler and facilitator. And, you know, the reality is we just paired really well together. I think, you know, me being more of a veteran, you know, having a bunch of experience under my belt, Patty being more of a talent, but not really having that experience at that level. We were kind of a very good Batman and Robin that way. And I was more than happy as a fifth year senior to take a backseat to him. And, you know, his fourth game that year, we were on national TV. We played Oregon. They were number 11 in the country at the time. And that was kind of Patty's coming out party. He had 37 in that game. We won on national TV, but you know, just a great experience. Patty and I are still close to this day. Megan and I went to his wedding a couple years ago, and we try to catch up every summer. But you know, it was definitely something that, you know, being able to play with great teammates like Patty Mills, Omar Samhan, Diamond Simpson, Ian O'Leary, you know, those guys gave me the opportunity to, you know, eventually play at the professional level for a couple years.
At what place in your professional career you started thinking coaching and that was the route that you wanted to go?
Honestly, it didn't really happen as I was playing pro. And in fact, it was kind of more the other way. It was, you know, I was over there in Israel, you know, living by myself, getting homesick every other day, you know, excited to kind of get back to the United States at some point and live what I thought would be more of a normal life, you know, getting out of the basketball world and, you know, whether it was entering finance or business, whatever it was, but living more of a, you know, standard Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 deal where I'd have my weekends, you know, and so that's what I did when I got back initially. But it was really when I did that for a couple of years and realized that putting a suit and tie on every day and, you know, having to sit at my desk until 5 o'clock on Friday, no matter what, wasn't what I was really passionate about. And it was basketball that I wanted to be a part of and being part of a team and kind of leading younger guys. So it was really after that outside of sport experience that kind of led me back into coaching and back into basketball.
And I know you joined Kyle Smith's staff there at Columbia, and you mentioned Kyle Smith had recruited you when you were a high schooler and then ultimately over St. Mary's. How did that conversation ultimately happen, and what was that transition like? I know you're in the advertising world for a little bit, but what was that transition like from, you know, a traditional 9 to 5 to obviously the very untraditional hours of working as a basketball coach?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Kyle got the job at Columbia after my second year in Israel. And so when, you know, he got it, I was still finishing up playing and he asked me to join his staff at that point. But I just wasn't ready to make that move, you know, go from playing professionally in Israel and then moving back to the States, but living in New York, you know, basically across the United States from my friends and family. And so we kind of had, Kyle and I would have conversations that felt like every off season, you know, for the first 2 years about, hey, do you want to come back? No. I'm just not ready for it. He would get pissed at me for about a week and then we'd get over it and we'd move on. And then, so it was really, I initiated the conversation, you know, after his second season, and he kind of made me beg for it, to be honest. He's like, "Hey, how bad do you want this? You know, do you really want to, you know, do you want to be a part?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'd love to be an assistant." He's like, "Well, no, I'm not going to give you that job. You have to be Dobo if you want to do this." And, you know, really made me earn it. And in fact, it really did give me a better foundation for coaching. But, you know, I think once we got back there and I started working with him and Carlin Hartman and Kevin Hovde and the rest of that staff, I knew right away that it was what I was meant to do and what I enjoyed doing. And even though the hours were different and, you know, we were always working on Saturdays and sometimes Sundays, it just felt, it didn't feel like work. And that was something that really, I was excited about and knew that I kind of found my calling.
For anyone listening, Dobo, director of basketball operations.
Yeah.
How did that help you? Just not jumping right into coaching and maybe just working from, you know, like a staff side. How did that help you just see how college basketball was? You know, now it's completely different. And I want to ask you about that later. But how did that just help you in terms of becoming a coach and learning while not coaching on the court?
You know, I think what people need to understand about college basketball, it's so much different than the NBA, right? There's just so many more variables and so many more factors of your program than in the NBA. Like NBA coaches get to coach basketball and then that's about it. Watch some film and they go home. Whereas in our world, you have recruiting, you have budgeting, you have scheduling, you have player development, you have all these different factors. And so I think working that first year at Columbia as a director of basketball operations, and then my first year with Bruce at Auburn, I was the director of basketball ops as well. I just feel like it gave me a really good understanding of how college basketball operates and how it works. And it's really, I think it's really important, and good programs have a great feel in all those different areas and aspects. And so those experiences just made me a more well-rounded coach and a more well-rounded CEO of sorts in regards to running a program.
Are you yourself surprised at how fast you rose up at a young age?
You know, sometimes, but I think we've also had a lot of success, and I think the best, you know, I've definitely had some good luck, but the best way to be lucky is to be good and put yourself in a position to be successful. And I think, you know, I've been fortunate, from the time I was in high school to be around really good coaches. You know, I think Randy Bennett is one of the best coaches in the country, you know, probably one of the most underrated coaches in the country. Kyle, you know, has always done really well at tough jobs, you know, won 23 games at Columbia, then went to San Francisco and had 3 20-win years there. And they hadn't had much success prior and got, you know, Washington State into the semis of the NIT. And as you guys know, that's a program that hasn't been any good since Tony Bennett left. So, you know, and then Bruce obviously is really, really successful and done it his own way. So I feel like I've had some really, really good mentors and role models to pull from. You know, I feel like my playing experience has helped me a lot in terms of being able to relate and coach guys and be able to figure out what makes them tick and be able to build true relationships with all my student athletes. And yeah, you know, if you would ask me 10 years ago, do you think you'd be the head coach at Florida? I would say probably not. But at the same time, you know, we were able to build San Francisco into an NCAA tournament team for the first time in 25 years. And we have had really good success. So, you know, I think this is an opportunity that I'm ready for and one that I'm really excited about.
Real quick, one more, Dan. Yeah. Our offense has been, it's been the thing at University of Florida lately since Billy left. That's been the complaint from fans. What should we expect offensively from Ty Golden basketball team?
Yeah, I think it's, and this is obviously what every coach says, but we're going to try to play. We're going to try to get easy baskets in transition. You know, I think that's, you know, the first thing that you have to build out and you have to be pretty good at if you want to be a very efficient offense. It's just way easier to score in transition than it is in the half court. So I think that's one thing that we'll continue to stress and work on. And what's exciting is we have guys that I think can really push it in transition. You know, Kyle Lofton, he's just a phenomenal point guard. You know, we're really fortunate to have him. I think he's a guy that's going to be a really good leader for us this year. And then you look at the other ball handlers, guys like Trey Bonham, Myron Jones. I think both those guys are going to be able to push it for us and really be able to play fast and make good decisions in transition. And then in the half court, you know, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. I think we have some really good pieces. You know, we're going to play out of the post with Colin. You know, Jatobo is a guy we'll throw it into and let him cook on the block a little bit. He has some really good skill and feel down there. And we'll play out of the ball screen quite a bit. You know, I think these guys, both Kyle and Trey, are really good playmakers and really good threats that way. And when you talk, we haven't even talked about guys like Will, Kawasi, Fudge, you know, just to name a few guys that can really, really shoot it, straight line drive it, get to the rim. We just have a lot of weapons. So I think we're going to be able to take advantage of that quite a bit. And I think this team will shoot the ball a little bit better than Florida has the past couple of years.
Todd, I want to ask you, because I know a lot of folks, when you got hired, connected your name to analytics and the use of deeper analytics and probably some things that are unfamiliar in the basketball world, except those that are really kind of dive in. How exactly do you use analytics, or what is it that made you kind of the analytics guy in college basketball that everybody always kind of referred to you as?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of different ways to look at it, you know, from why we've gotten the respect and I would guess the notoriety in terms of, you know, the national landscape and in our analytical kind of mentality. You know, we do some things in games that are a little unique. You know, we foul teams at the end of games in some scenarios where other people might think it'd be crazy to do that. And we've scheduled in a way where we've kind of drawn some, people have been inquisitive about it. You know, why are you guys doing this? You know, why does this make sense? And I think when people see the results and see that we were 23rd in the net last year at San Francisco and 23rd in KenPom, like, all right, these guys might be up to something. They might have something figured out. And so I think those are the main reasons why, from a national standpoint, we've kind of gained that sort of reputation. But really, it's more of a holistic approach in the way we view it and the way we think about basketball, the way we think about our program. You know, myself, Jonathan Sapphire, specifically, you know, we're really analytical in the way we process things and think about it. And so it's really in every aspect of our program, we're trying to get as much data as possible, whether it's scheduling, whether it's, you know, lineup data, whether it's player development in the preseason, we're just trying to get as much information as possible. And then analyze the data and then try to get the best solutions or try to get the best answers from that. And we're not always going to be right, but we're always going to give ourselves the best opportunity to be right. And so when we do that, I think you find ways to have success in the margins. And so it's really more of an approach in the way we go about our everyday business here in the program. It's more of an analytical approach than one specific thing. But those things in terms of fouling and scheduling, those are kind of the things that have kind of got opened people's eyes to our program.
That was one for me, like noticing like an intentional foul with like a second before half or a couple seconds before half to get like another possession, like instead of trying for, you know, a 1-1, like, hey, if we foul, we can get two offensive possessions. And that one to me, I think I made sure to like tell fans like, hey, watch some of this stuff, because the first time you see in the O-Dome, you don't need to be like yelling and cursing. Like this is how the program is going to look. And these are some of the things that they're going to do. And there's a reason behind it.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those. It's funny because like Jeff Goodman, I was talking to Jeff Goodman. He's like, hey, you know, I know you do all these things where you're fouling and stuff. Are you going to be able to handle it when it doesn't work out? You know, when in your first couple of games at the O-Dome, and I'm like, you know what? That's who we are, man. I mean, they're gonna have to live with it. I'm gonna have to live with it. You know, that's what got us here. And you know, I think that's the thing that you got to understand in terms of like when you do things, you know, a little bit outside the box. You know, as long as you're giving yourself the best chance to be successful, you have to be true to it. And you can't be afraid about it. You know, you can't pick and choose when you're going to try to execute it. You got to have for lack of a better term, you got to have some stones to be able to do it. You know, whether you're playing Kentucky or whether you're playing, you know, a smaller school, you know, so it's who we are, and we're not going to run from it.
The transfer portal is changing college basketball, football, maybe even more so in basketball, just because of the smaller roster size. How much does that change your philosophy as a coach? Cause now, because of the one-time transfer, exception, you might not get a kid to commit to you and then have him for 3 or 4 years. You could have him for one. How does that just change roster building and shaping of your program?
Yeah, it's changed it a lot. It just really has. You know, I think, we kind of picked up on it after my second year at San Francisco. We're like, hey, you know, this is probably a good vehicle, especially there, to get some guys that we normally wouldn't be able to get out of high school. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to add, you know, some really, really talented big guys that way and really beefed up our team to the point where, you know, we obviously had a high major plus team. And so when we got here, we were excited because there were really good talent in the program, you know, that we were able to keep guys like Colin, Kawasi, Myron, Nile, CJ, Jason, you know, and then kept Denzel as a recruit. So we had some really good pieces to build around. And then I thought we did a really good job of being strategic in terms of who we added in the portal, you know, really good guys, guys that fit kind of the fabric of our program. and then really good talents. And so we were able to kind of go in and fill some holes and get some guys that were a little older, a little more accomplished. And then, like I said, fit, you know, were skilled and guys that we thought would really mesh with the guys that we already had. And so knock on wood, so far, I feel that that's kind of coming to fruition within our practices. And it's something that, you know, we're going to, I feel like here at Florida, we're going to be able to get more talented guys out of high school. And so we'll be able to continue to focus on that. But, you know, we're going to always I would say at least for the next year or two, until those COVID years run out, you know, we'll add, you know, a piece or two or three in the portal every year if that's what the roster is asking for. And so I would say it's more of a year to year build at this point, you know, and mm-hmm. we're going to hope that we keep some of these younger guys, you know, for 3 or 4 years and get them graduated. But just understanding that the freedom in which they have now to be able to leave and not sit out, it makes it a little different where there's a little less reason for them to stay now, knowing that they can go play right away. But if we're doing what we're supposed to, I think we'll, you know, guys like Denzel, you know, we'll keep these freshmen around and graduate them and build with those guys as well. And just add some pieces here and there in the portal.
I know you got to get up out of here, man. Heard you're a big Lil Wayne and a Lil Baby fan. Give me your favorite Lil Wayne album.
Carter Three, man, back in 07-08 when it came out, you know, I was a senior in college and probably listened to it every day, man. And you know, Wayne's, you know, I don't want to say he's fallen off, but he's definitely changed over the past 15 years from right. when he was in his prime. Yeah. And so
he's still in shape. He still can rap now.
He can still go for sure. He's got a little different way to him. But you know, Lil Baby, Future, those are the guys that I'm rocking with these days.
What's your favorite Lil Baby about to drop a new album? But what's your favorite Lil Baby song before you get out of here?
I'm an All In guy, man. I love All In. It is, man. It goes hard. It gets me going. I appreciate it.
All right.
I love
Thanks
it,
for hanging out, man.
Well, thanks so much, Todd. We appreciate it. Thanks to Denver Parlor, who works for the University of Florida, for helping set this up as well. Todd, best of luck this season, and we look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, fellas. Appreciate it. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Go Gators. Great interview with Todd Golden. Really cool story for him. I think my favorite part of the discussion was just kind of following his trajectory over the last 10 years is pretty incredible. To go from finishing your basketball career over in Israel to working in advertising, to ultimately ending up as a director of basketball operations at Columbia. And 10 years later, you are the head coach at the University of Florida. Is obviously a meteoric rise and probably rivals just about anybody else. That especially without the name recognition, right?
Yeah. Like, not to get into, like, anyone's pockets, but, like, he was working in, like, selling ads. Like, you're making good money selling mm-hmm. ads, you know, for sports to Comcast and to IMG. And then after turning down your buddy for a job for a while, you're like, you know what? I don't love this anymore. Let me go back to my buddy. He's offered me the job a couple times. This should be easy. And he's like, now you're interested in the job. All right. Well, you're going to be Dobo. You're not going to be a coach.
Yeah.
You're going to be the director of basketball operations and you're going to have to earn it. And you're still like, okay, yeah, I'll put down, you know, a 6-figure job, to go work, 106 hours a week, you know, cutting up film and doing stuff behind the scenes for a basketball program.
Yeah.
Meteoric rise, yeah.
Dope, man. He's young, man. You got a lot of potential. Excited to see what the basketball program look like this fall before I get all crazy. But I just like the way he's talking. We'll see what the offense looks like.
Yeah, I think that they just started doing some practices that I saw late last week, and so it'll be great to watch them. Obviously, a completely new team from what we saw last year under Mike White. So definitely excited and very appreciative of him. For sitting down with us, and definitely appreciate Denver Parlor for helping put all of that together. Let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Alumni Hall. So want Gator gear? Alumni Hall is your ultimate shopping experience. New blue jerseys that are there, new Jordan polos are out, and everything you need for your tailgate setup are in store and online now. So make sure when you're ready for Gator football, when it comes back here in just a few short weeks, visit them on Archer Road in Gainesville or at alumnihall.com. gatorfans.com. Alumni Hall, where Gator fans shop, including myself. Got me one of the new white polo, coaches polo, Jumpman polos that came out. So very excited to wear that. Had my old Nike polo shirt for about 6 years now, so it's time to put that one into retirement. So, all right, gentlemen, we've got Friday Night Lights coming in next Friday. Some big names on that list. Want to go over some of those. Want to give a shout out to Corey Bender, Cormani McClain. Some discussion about him on Threes Rankings. Nick, you're going to have to stand for your organization here in a second. Drops Cormani McClain down from the number three overall player down to number 19. But he'll be in attendance, number one defensive tackle. James Smith, five-star edge. Jaquavius Rousseau. Desmond Ricks, who's been on campus now a couple of times, will be there. Top 100 defensive lineman. Kelby Collins. Safety Jordan Castell. I think the Gators are potentially hoping to have him in this class in the not too distant future. Same with defensive lineman Will Norman over at IMG Academy. Andy Jean, who released the top five with the Florida Gators in it. On three, top 300 player defensive lineman Cameron James, who shot up the rankings. Offensive tackle Tyree Adams. Gators desperately need some help on the offensive line. Eugene Wilson, Gator commit, will be in attendance. Lewis Carter, four-star linebacker. Potential commit wide receiver Jaquavius Sorey. Offensive line target Peyton Kirkland. Sharif Denson, Treyon Webb, Bryce Levitt, Gavin Hill, Najee Harris, Creed Whittemore, and a number of other big names there looking to shape up to be a big weekend. I know that they're doing Friday Night Lights on Friday and then doing a cookout and barbecue on Saturday. Nick, do you know anything more that you might be able to share, or Silk, anything more about that event that you guys have heard about?
I think a little more exclusive, a little smaller than normal. Yep. For Friday Night Lights, which is good. Probably getting back to what it started as. And then the cookout, I think, is I don't know how many of these kids that, like, you really want to get. And, like, sure, you'll get a kid that shows out at Friday Night Lights. Mm-hmm. I think the cookout might even be more of a better recruiting tool than the actual Friday Night Lights camp.
Mm.
Just because you're kind of in a chill, laid-back environment. You have more time to talk. The coaches aren't running through drills, stuff like that. You can focus on guys. Break bread, baby. Relationship ribs.
That's right.
Yeah, I do like that. Like that is more exclusive. They dwindled down the numbers some. It just became like a normal or regular camp. That's not how Urban started it when he came aboard. So I do like that. I just want to see what the names are officially next week. I know we got some decisions coming up this week, starting, I think, tomorrow. Or it'll be today when this drop, I think. We should have some decisions this weekend as well. I want to see if those guys still make it. And you know, do got to pick. We probably should move that camp up some.
Do you think?
I think so. I said it looks like these kids' timetable right now for this year is going to be starting to, like, load up towards the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt a rush like this of, like, commits at one time like we are this summer, in my opinion. So it seems like that camp would be more effective earlier in the summer.
Are you allowed to, with the dead periods and things of that nature happening?
Allowed to what?
To have, like, a Friday Night Lights in earlier in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, Miami and other schools have had camps.
Paradise Camp?
Yeah. I just think you move it up. This is a date thing. I think you can move it up early in the summer, maybe in June sometime. And it's more effective than.
Do you think it's a this year thing, or it's a new wave thing? Because it could just be this cycle.
Yeah, it could be, but it feels like this may be a thing. And then you just can't hurt yourself by going early in the summer, right? To just be safe.
I think the point of it was that everyone had their camps, and Urban wanted it to be the biggest, the most exclusive, and then the last one. Like, mm-hmm. before, it was the last visit these kids are going to take before they start their fall practice. So I think that's why they hold it late. But if you're putting yourself at a competitive disadvantage in recruiting by doing it late, you got to weigh the cost benefit analysis of, all right, cool. It is the last time, the last campus they're going to see before they go, you know, to their, to start their senior season, junior season, whatever it may be, versus, well, shoot, if all these kids are already committed to other schools, are they even going to come?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to look back at other dates of when they've been. This one does seem later than other years previous. You know, I don't know how Friday Night Lights compares now to the other events around the country. I'm not saying that it's better. I'm not saying that it's worse. But I'm just curious to see how it does compare. You know, certainly Urban Meyer was one of the first to jump on the Friday, you know, camp and the night camp and everything else. So I'm curious to see how it compares, you know, and also is it time to maybe do something different, right? You know, has it kind of run its course? You know, as a Friday night event, is it better on a Saturday? Would you get better participants on a Saturday compared to Friday? I don't know, right? But, you know, certainly this Friday Night Lights outside of the COVID year certainly seems like the one that's the least hyped, not necessarily that the attendees are the least hyped, but certainly the number of attendees seems a lot smaller, which, you know, Nick said, you know, feels pretty purposeful, but also there doesn't seem to be a lot of hype around this event. But I think part of it is because a lot of folks are starting to make decisions now a hell of a lot earlier than they used to. Right. So, you know, this used to be the time that kids would get on the campus and then they would visit a time or two in the fall. And now it just seems like a lot of these kids are making the decision before going into their senior year and probably won't travel much. And, you know, if they haven't made their decision by the end of July, will this really impact a ton of, you know, on their decision? I'm not sure. So certainly we'll be excited to see who does come onto campus. Certainly a lot of big names potentially in attendance. I do want to talk about just overall class thoughts. Silke, you said that there's, you know, potentially some transfers. We talked a little bit about last week, but you know, just another week. Any additional thoughts? I know that there's obviously a lot of discussion about Jay Bateman right now, and certainly Rob Sale the Gator fan base seems to be talking about. But from a recruiting perspective, Gators blue chip numbers come out on the On3 rankings, and right now, I mean, if you look at their class, it's a pretty good class overall right now. I think they've got four three stars, and then the rest that make up that class are four stars. You know, so eight to four, pretty solid, you know, numbers. What do you guys think?
I think the numbers are solid, but the problem is like, do your options to fill the class out or disappearing? So that number, that average is probably going to drop unless we flipping people, mm-hmm. right? Just from the law of numbers. So I think that's the biggest issue, and just the targets we missing out on head-to-head battles. The average could be even better, and we losing out to Florida State. It's one thing if we think it's NIL based, and we may have got outbid it, but that's not happening with battles with Florida State in South Carolina in my mind. Mm-hmm. So just those battles like that, we should be able to win, and our fan base is used to winning those. Those are not Florida. When Florida State's down, we win those. But South Carolina, like, that's just not one we should be losing out on, especially with kids from this state. Mm. So I think that is a little alarming. I mean, I don't want to make light of that. Like, we should be able to. Somebody, the linebacker board is abysmal. Like, I don't know what the board is right now.
Mm-hmm.
You got any eligibility?
I got. If they allow me, man, I get out there at 145 pounds. Give them what I got.
you got gunner size. You used to have that linebacker size.
I got linebacker mentality though.
So. Okay. Yeah. I got that dog in me.
Yeah. I know how to get out of the way of road graders too.
That's I'm shifty. That's the biggest thing that you hit on, Silk, is that I think the class is in a good place, but the positions that you need to get, well, what's left out there?
Yeah.
Right. And are you just going to start throwing offers because you need linebackers in this class, because you need offensive linemen in this class?
Yes.
Just to fill the class because you want to get 25, 26, 30. you know, because right now you're going to be able to sign more than 25 a year. So you're not even, you know, beholden to only signing 10 more guys. That's the issue for me. And how much does Florida's success, or not even success in wins and losses total, but what does the product look like that you can sell to maybe flip some guys and like, hey, look, we were 7-5 this year. We played Texas A&M really close. We played Georgia closer than people thought. You, Corey Knowles, are the linebacker that we need to help our defense, which gets us one more stop, and then we beat Georgia. Then we beat Texas A&M. Can you sell that? So to me, you hit the nail on the head. Is that I have no problem where the class is right now, but like you said perfectly, I think it will drop based on the guys that are available. You know, the blue chip ratio at least will drop.
Right.
Yeah. No. Be curious to see, you know, how it ultimately does shake out. You know, certainly, you know, the Gators are sitting in a good position, I think, from a wide receiver perspective. I think that they're going to be able to get some solid players on the defensive side of the ball.
Everybody's worried about Cole, like Kerry. Like, Kerry out here cooking, man, with hot grease.
Yeah.
Kerry Cobra. Give him some flowers, man. I think we're going to land a couple more receivers that's going to be on the real deal. But he knows what he got to do. He's far from the problem.
Yeah, no, I would agree 100%. But, you know, certainly Florida has some issues at linebacker, some issues on the offensive line, you know, and probably some just other, you know, areas as well. Well, they'll probably take some solid players, but, you know, missed out on some elite gets. And that's really where, you know, Florida has missed, I would say, over the last, you know, number of years is, you know, Florida's consistently had some pretty good recruiting classes. They just haven't been elite. And even if they are ranked pretty well, there's not a lot of, you know, big game changers, right? You know, like when you think of a game changer, you think of like a Dalvin Cook was a game changer for FSU, right? Percy Harvin, you know, Tim Tebow were game changers. There's been a few, but it just seems like Florida has had some very solid classes, and they really need to start landing some big, you know, names that are going to attract other people to be there. Certainly getting a guy like Cormani McClain would be great, but still you need to be in a position to land those guys. And I just don't know if Florida's going to get that this year. You know, we just kind of see them kicking the can down.
I think the approach is, and I think this isn't just Florida's approach. I think this is probably a couple schools' approach. I think Florida's approach is, and I think Pate, one of the guys, I think it's Josh Pate, his name, he had a similar
Josh Pate.
These bills and these promises are going to come a due, you know, like a lot of people are making NIL promises and also giving upfront money, while it may be illegal, but that's happened. It's always happened. It's not going to change the NIL. I don't think Georgia's playing that game right now. And I think they should be recruiting at a higher level. And I think they are just cuffing some money and some tactics until rents do. Georgia just came off a national championship year. I think even though they're doing good recruiting, but I think they're holding that their bullets until the final duel, I would say. And I think that's Florida approach. We just can't sell wins like a Georgia and a Bama can, right? Mm-hmm. So they're still able to get guys from their recent success in their last year playoffs and whatnot. So I think we have a similar approach to those guys. We just can't sell winning right now. And also, we have a coach that we just got from G5. That's just what it is. So we have a similar approach. We just don't have the same product to sell right now. And we got to see who's right, because Tennessee is one of those programs. I think is they getting busy in NIL right now. Then they making some promises. They landing a nice class. But we've seen Tennessee do this in the offseason before. They did it with Pruitt. They had some crazy offseason with class, and people thought Tennessee was back. And then, you know, things happen, season get played, and it falls apart. But I think there's some different approaches from different programs here, and we'll see what the final results are and who's right with the approach to this NIL and the way recruiting set up.
Yeah. I think that you make a really good point there, Silk. I think that's something that, you know, we're certainly – there's still a lot of time left between now and, you know, National Signing Day. Obviously, there is a lot of, you know, things in the back of my mind that know that NIL is important and know that relationships are important, but also know that winning, no matter what, is also important, right? You know, a lot of these kids want to be able to compete. And, you know, certainly there's going to be the ones that go and maybe just take the most money or, you know, to be the prized possession in a recruiting class, but, or the prize to get in a recruiting class, you know, but I'm curious to see how it all does start to shake out, right? Obviously, you know, Miami's throwing a lot of money in name, image, and likeness and with LifeWall, and they don't do a, they don't really try to hide that at all. Right. And they've had less success than Florida's had over the last, you know, certainly the last two decades. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Right. It'll be interesting to see what happens at a school like Louisville that seems to be recruiting well with NIL and what happens with Tennessee. I'm not as high on Tennessee's class as maybe some of the recruiting services are. I mean, if you look at On3, a lot of their recruits are ranked in the 900s or below. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this all does shake out. Overall, but you know, like you've said, you know, I think that Florida's class can be solid, but it's still missing that big piece and that big component, you know, to truly start to compete for those big championships.
My question about offensive line recruitment: what is the dynamic like? Is there a lead recruiter with these guys, or do they split the room area? Like, what is Stapleton and us and sales role in the recruiting world? Do you know, Nick? What do you hear from recruits? Do recruits talk to both of these guys? Like, what is their process like? We got two guys recruiting a room, and like for to have two guys in that room is the results ain't there. So just interested in what their process is like.
Well, they both got their areas, but they will definitely talk to recruits, whether it's DM on the phone, and then when they're on campus, both guys. Yeah, it's a tag team effort. So. Right now, you're not getting a lot from your three and four hitters in the lineup.
Right.
Yeah, no, Florida's in a bad position there. That's probably the position they're sitting worst in right now. Certainly, there's going to be some transfers and, you know, areas that they can try to, you know, satiate the need there. But right now, that offensive line recruiting is not going well. And it's been quite some time, right? I mean, outside of Osiris Torrance, who comes to UF as a transfer, you know, Florida hasn't recruited offensive line outstandingly in the last decade, right? We've got some five those, stars in there, but
for almost half that decade was John Hevesy, and you weren't going to be landing a bunch of recruits when he was your offensive line coach.
Right, but I mean, you look at the recruiting, you know, you look at the offensive line room now and you say, hey, that could be one of Florida's best areas, right? We had Josh Braun on last week. Obviously, you had Osiris Torrance. You have Richard Garage. You have some, you know, guys that were ranked, you know, pretty well, but you don't have any real elite guys that were, you know, the top of the class. I mean, Richard Garage maybe was, you know, in his group, but, you know, ultimately overall, what if instead of having, you know, a group of solid four stars that you developed, if you had a couple five stars to be able there to develop as well, right? And you can say that in a lot of different areas, and we can look and say Florida's blue chip ratio is great. You know, the class of 25, 18 of them are four star or higher, right? But like you're missing that five star that can turn into an elite player, right? You're taking good players and making them better. But what if you took a great player and made them better, right? That's where I think that, you know, ultimately Florida's missing right now.
It's I've always said it's a tough position to recruit well at. A ton of it is long-term projections. I mean, you look at a guy like David Sharp. Mm-hmm. David Sharp was a consensus five-star guy. And then I go to one of his high school games up in Jacksonville, and I'm like, he weighs 120 pounds more than any defensive lineman he's playing against. Mm-hmm. And they run the ball. 95% of the plays that they're calling are runs. I'm like, maybe he's a five-star, but I don't know. I'm seeing him do one thing against smaller guys. And you've got guys like that throughout the country. So it's a huge projection for offensive linemen. Usually you start projecting. And listen, you got a whole damn army of people that are breaking down film and that are helping him recruiting. So not to say that you should have, you know, 7 3-stars and be like, hey, listen, trust our evaluation. But it is a tough position to recruit.
No doubt.
Let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Use promo code Stadium and Gale at checkout. Maybe you're a Kansas State fan. Who knows? Maybe you have a family or friend that went there and you want to buy them some stuff. They just dropped a new line for Kansas State this past Saturday. But ultimately, you're here for the Gators. 17 different options, T-shirts, hoodies, retro from the baseball script Florida logo to a track and field logo to some old Albert and Alberta logos to some Gator logos from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Go check them out. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale, all one word. Nick, these next two segments are going to be focused on you. Want to talk about baseball and the draft that just came out, but SEC Media Days started today. You and Zach Albaverde will be heading up there tomorrow. Your thoughts, what kind of questions? Where are you going to go? What are you going to try to get out of Billy Napier at SEC Media Days? And how can we help you? What narratives do you need us to help you guide?
What narratives do you want me to
put? Best hands on the staff.
Best hands on staff.
Traditional Lil Wayne or Lil Baby.
Yeah.
I don't know what will get so much out of Billy. He's going to be asked a ton about name, image, likeness. He's going to be asked a bunch about conference expansion, both things. He's a broken record on. He doesn't know enough about the SEC. He's just trying to coach his team. Isn't educated enough to talk about conference realignment. NIL, Florida has a huge alumni base. NIL will be a strength for University of Florida, passionate fan base.
Gator Collective, yeah.
The Gator Collective, yep. Got the talking points. So he's going to be asked about that. So glad that we have our time with the local media only, because we know not to ask those questions, because I think I just gave the Cliff Notes guide of what he will say to any of those. I want to know more, and I don't know that he'll get into it, but you got to ask. I want to know more, where is the program right now? When you come in, you have a plan as a coach, where you want to be 30 days in, 60 days in, 90 days in, where do we want to be at, you know, as we're on the doorstep of the season? Are you hitting your targets? Are you where you want the program to be? Are you a little bit behind? Are you ahead? And some honesty there would be cool. I haven't seen a lot of talk about Jason Marshall, and maybe we're caught up and we, there's just really no hype about him. I haven't really seen him on like any preseason watch lists, awards, stuff like that, and that stuff's still coming out. Want to know what his thoughts about Jason Marshall are, and then probably even more importantly, across from him, who's playing across from him?
Yeah.
Some things like, hey, you brought a quarterback, you brought Anthony. You didn't really, I don't think he really named Anthony the starter, but you bring your starter, and it's not a surprise that he's the starting quarterback, but you bring your starting quarterback to Media Days. I think since Jeff Driscoll, this is only the third quarterback that's gone to Media Days for Florida.
Oh, wow.
With Felipe Franks being the other one year. And then maybe just like a big picture thing, like you're in this circus now, and SEC Media Days is a circus. Just overall thoughts on getting the full SEC experience when, you know, you're going through the car wash of Media Day.
Well, he's the head coach now. He's had some experience of it. Has he ever been at SEC Media Day at all?
No.
Just the head coaches, yeah.
Head coach and players.
Okay.
And the I'd be curious. I'd also be interested to know, maybe this isn't an SEC Media Days question, but, you know, how the staff's gelling together, right? Not just your staff that's made up of a lot of different people that have never worked together. Right. I mean, you had a guy like Corey Raymond, you know, what's his impact been life and working with Patrick Toney? Right. I mean, they're collabing for that, that backfield. Right. What's that relationship been like, or what's it been like trying to assimilate 70 people into a new town while you yourself are getting assimilated? And how is that all working together? So I'd be curious to know more about that. I doubt that you'll be able to have that conversation to a real actual discussion other than we've got a fantastic team that's working hard behind the scenes. And you know, they really care about the Gator Nation, and he's very proud of their work. But I'd be actually curious to see how all of that is going overall. But certainly there's a mix of old and new, a mix of big names that people have heard of, and certainly, you know, new names onto the coaching radar. So all curious to see how that is working together. That will be a fun event, I think, for you, Nick, this year.
Interested to hear AR speak.
Mm-hmm.
From a leadership standpoint, I think he speaks well regardless anyway, you know, so to see him be the guy, get the mic, like you said, we haven't seen quarterbacks, you know, as in a leadership position and being able to speak on national television and lead the team, man. So just interested to see him, how he comes off, what he wears, all that, man.
Yeah.
I am interested in the drip.
Yeah, he's got some. I'm not gonna lie, he probably doesn't work with Hong Kong Andy, but he probably works with somebody probably equal caliber.
Probably Zimbabwe Tyrone.
Zimbabwe Tyrone. Yeah, that's gotta be it.
Who is actually from Thailand?
That's a fantastic name for the title, too. Zimbabwe Tyrone. I'm curious to see that. Nick, I want to ask you, though. I'm starting to see a lot of names and who people are excited about and everything else. The top five quarterbacks, according to Will Levis for the SEC. Will, why do we keep seeing Will Levis's name?
He's on the hype train.
Listen. Satan works hard, but Will Levis's management team works harder.
I'll tell you what. Like,
the guy is he's a good quarterback. He's good. Yeah. He's fine. You're not mad if he's your quarterback. I'm seeing Kentucky fans saying that he's better than Bryce Young, the Heisman winner from last year. They think it's egregious that you're even putting Anthony Richardson in the same context, in the same sentence as Will Levis. What are we doing here?
Listen, he went what, 7-17 last year against UF?
Nothing against him. Seems like a nice guy. Definitely weird. Eating banana skins, mayo in the coffee. Weird. He's marketed himself as the weird guy.
So bad.
His agent, his manager, whoever it is, he is that guy. Hey, if you have any room on your roster, I'm looking for representation too, because he's working wonders for Will Levis.
How you think he's a brand new, bro?
I don't know, bro, but listen, you got a guy eating banana skins, and now they're talking about him. People are actually talking about him as a first-round quarterback pick. A first-round pick in the NFL draft. It's not me. I'm paying that guy to market me. I don't need to tell him how to do it. He's doing it with a will.
I'll be honest with you. I just remember his name because him and Spencer of Spencer's Jerk and Jerky beefed on the internet, or maybe Spencer made fun of him or something. I don't remember, but they got into it on the internet last year. That's really kind of the only reason I remember his name. Certainly not a bad quarterback, but definitely did not anticipate Tim Tebow ranking him as the second best quarterback in the SEC behind Bryce Young, ahead of Anthony Richardson at 3, Spencer Rattler number 4, and Hendon Hooker number 5. I'll be honest with you. I think Spencer Rattler is getting a lot of, you know, people that have forgotten maybe what we saw out of him at Oklahoma.
It was egregious.
You know, I don't think that South Carolina's offense is going to be any better than Oklahoma in terms of putting players in position to make impact with the ball. So still very surprised to see Spencer Rattler's name that high. Not saying that Anthony Richardson's name should be higher or lower. It has nothing to do with him. It's just a bit surprised that Will Levis is number 2, according to Tim Tebow. And I thought Hendon Hooker might be a little bit higher, to be honest with you. He put up at least some numbers last year.
That's in typical Tennessee fashion. Turn it on at the end of the year with the lesser part of your schedule. Start that hype train for the offseason.
I'm excited to see this team, man. I know we're not going to get into a whole lot of fall talk, but we just got to see a team that quit towards the end of last year. So it was a lot of sour, like, memories. Mm-hmm. But seeing these guys with some new buy-in, you know, you're going to get a spark. So I know our schedule's rough, but I'm excited to see what, you know what I'm saying, these guys step out and do.
Absolutely.
15 go crazy. It's a wrap. You know, we just need him to just stay healthy, bro.
Go brazy, as the kids would say.
Already.
Hey, look at that.
Look at Nick. Look Nick. At
hello, youths.
Hello. How do you do? Youths. Nick, let's talk a little baseball. MLB draft. Are you still doing like 700 rounds, or did they
just 20? 20 rounds.
I remember, who was it? Was it one of the Gator players? I forgot who it was that just got drafted again. Was drafted in like the 39th round a few years ago by the A's. I'm like, good Lord. Anyway, Nick, in the first couple of days, the Gator signee. First baseman Xavier Isaac got drafted by the Rays, number 29 yep. overall. I would imagine that that's a guy that is going to probably take that money and go and move here to beautiful Tampa Bay. Well, not to Tampa, Bay, probably head to some western Mississippi town or something for a few months. And then Sterling Thompson and goes at the very end of the first round, number 31, Hunter Barco. 44th, Judd Fabian, 67th. Judd was drafted 54 last year, decided to come back, gets picked up at 67 this year. But Nick, why don't you dive in a little bit more about the Gators baseball draft?
Yeah. Flores had four guys picked. I think the recruiting class, I'll get in the recruiting class second. Four guys picked. As you mentioned, Sterling Thompson was the first one to go. Colorado Rockies, he went 31st overall. Hunter Barco, despite having Tommy John surgery, goes 47th overall to the Pirates. He's still going to be on the shelf. He'll miss probably his entire first year of pro ball, but he'll sign. Judd Fabian, 67th to the suddenly hot Baltimore Orioles, no longer a doormat. And then Brandon Sproat goes 90th to the Mets. All of those guys will sign. Xavier Isaac, he'll sign. Isaac is the only Florida Gator signee that has been drafted and is going to leave. And
oh, wow.
Somebody else was saying to me, does that mean the class is bad? And it's like, no, there's a lot of reasons. You know, a guy like Luke Hyman, a catcher who is going to make it to campus now, which is great for Florida.
Hyman
can put out a number. Hey, I'm not going to sign for less than $2 million. The Red Sox just signed their first round pick from last night for $2 million over slot. So like they really wanted him. He probably told them, "Hey, here's a number it's going to take to sign me," and they go, "Okay, sure, whatever. We're going to take it." Some of the numbers guys give might scare teams off, and then all of a sudden it scares them off. Okay, well, is he signable, or are we going to waste our first round pick? Are we going to waste our second round pick? And then by the time it gets to the fifth, sixth round, that slot and the guys you've taken, now it doesn't make sense. And then guys fall because of that. So a guy like Luke Hyman, I think, would have been a top 10 pick. He probably is telling people after the fourth, fifth round, hey, this is my number. You're not going to be able to sign me. So Florida's recruiting class is really good. Hyman's probably the best one in the class coming in, but you have a couple guys right from down the street from you, Dan, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. They're going to be in the class.
Okay. Big rival, so smaller Springs High School.
I don't think.
Also, I don't live down there anymore, but
I don't think Douglas would consider it a rival.
You say Coral Springs have no rival?
No. They probably think they have rivals.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they have rivals.
It's like Tennessee having a rivalry with Florida.
Right.
It's like, we just happen to play you every year. It's not a real rival.
No, we just play. They just keep scheduling it. So overall for Florida, I had someone text me yesterday and then they were
Douglas was a national champion? Yeah. I wonder how bad they beat my Coral Springs Colts by.
Oh.
Y'all the Colts. Oh.
Yeah, they used to up until I think the 90s.
Coral Springs baby horses.
Donkeys.
They used to have a place that you could tie your horse up at the school, I think, up until the 90s.
Oh, that's good. A lot of tradition at Coral Springs.
We've been trash for a long time. Getting better, I think. I've heard, but.
Can't get worse.
No. Not putting a lot of guys into professional sports. But so, Nick, the Gators also grabbed a transfer from Mercer that was drafted. Colby Thomas, Brandon Sproat was drafted 90th overall. Thomas, does Colby Thomas?
Yeah, Colby Thomas is not going to make it. I would be very surprised if he makes it to campus. So when you get drafted, so when I say like slot or what this guy signed for, that's just your signing bonus. And obviously when you're negotiating that signing bonus, the fallback plan of, all right, well, I'm just going to go play at Florida next year is a lot more of a negotiating tool than, all right, I'm just going to go back and play at Mercer next year.
Sure. I understand.
He wanted to be drafted in the first three rounds. Now, listen, he might not get, I'd have to go in and see who drafted him, who they drafted ahead of him, what they did in the next 10 rounds, because each team gets a pool of money to use for those first 10 picks. And you can go over that, but you get heavily penalized for going over that pool. So we'll see if he gets the number he wants to sign, but it was, I think, his intention to sign this year. And if for some reason he fell in the draft, he would have been fine going to Florida, but I think Florida for him was more of a negotiating tool for the draft. But if you're Kevin O'Sullivan and a kid who's going to be a top 3-5 round draft pick wants to come to your school, you don't say no.
Sure. Corey Acton also. Never mind. Oh yeah, I guess
the Georgia transferred.
Georgia trans. Yeah, Florida Gators transferred to Georgia. He was drafted on a later round, let's see, ninth round of the draft today. And then I'm trying to see if there's anybody else that that we need to talk about. Certainly, congratulations to all of those folks that were drafted. Judd Fabian has to leave, right? Or could he potentially come back?
He could come back. He's not going to, but he could.
Okay. Yeah. This was, yeah. Anybody, and you presume everybody that's been drafted so far that is eligible to leave or that is eligible to come back will probably choose to leave, correct?
You can't say definite.
Okay.
But they definitely will leave.
Okay, perfect. Appreciate that. Silk, I think we are nearing the end of the show. Why don't you get us a Manscaped ad read? And then I think you also have there, Nick, you have Song of the Week. So start thinking about what that is.
Manscaped.com. You heard my man Nick in the intro, man. No Harry Larry. You got your man Hoochie shorts. You need the Lawnmower 4.0 to keep them thighs right, man. Skies out, thighs out, baby. Use coupon code 20SG at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. They also have body wash, weed whacker for your nostrils and ears. They have underwear. They have ball toner and spritzer to keep everything smooth, man. And also the deodorant, which is a mandatory man. You need to keep that in your man bag. Just keep that on deck, man, so you don't get any sticky situation in these hot summer months. Coupon code 20SG at checkout for 20% off.
Perfect. Here. Nick, what do we got? Hopefully no pirate theme songs.
It's a shanty.
It's a shanty.
No, we're going, you might call this a little too Nashville country, Dan, but Luke Combs is
a big Luke Combs fan.
You never know what to expect out of Nick, man. You just never know what he's going to bring. It could be Lil Wayne. It could be some country. It could be.
I'm all over the map.
Some folk music. You just never know.
I provide balance. Silk's got rap, R&B.
Yeah.
Dan's hitting us with Marshmello. and then some like off the beaten path country.
Right.
And I'm going country this week. It's Luke Combs' new album. The album's called Growing Up, and the song is the first one doing this.
I'll tell you what, that song slaps. Song. That is on my.
You start blushing with that. That gotta be fire.
I'll tell you what.
Give me some bars.
That is a top probably 10 country music song that's come out in the last year, I think.
Get the people some bars, man. Go karaoke on.
Well, see, what happened was the last time I sang on
it was
this
a hit.
Show, the internet was quite critical of me. So I don't want to take this one away from Luke Combs. It was okay. I think we took it away from, was it Diamond Rio last time or the George Strait. I don't remember who I was singing last time. I'll let Luke Combs have this
one. It was I Told You So. You sang when I made the song, I Told You So.
Yes.
The Danny Machado episode.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, boys, great show. We are near the beginning of football season, which is always obviously content and everything else. So we are excited. Happy Monday evening. Thanks to everybody that followed us on YouTube. We are going to be doing a live stream of this show each and every week on our YouTube channel. So definitely check that out. Make sure you check out and reach out to our sponsors. Use those promo codes. If you forget, feel free to check out that YouTube. They're scrolling at the bottom.
Supports us and saves you some money.
It does. Every single person that sponsors our show is giving you the opportunity to save money as well. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week.
Here.
Someone asked me once in an interview, what was growing up like? Where'd you go to school? And what would you do if you weren't doing this? I'd be driving my first car in a worn-out Dodge, trying to make rent with a dead-end job, just making do, tips in a jar, my guitar in an old bar stool. I'd have a Friday night crowd in the palm of my hand, couple brown liquor, couple buddies in the band, singing them same damn songs like I am now. I'd be feeling on fire on a hardwood stage, bright lights like lightning running through my veins, at the Grand still be doing this if I wasn't doing this. I'd still be the same guy they knew back in the day, who was burning CDs just to give away, paying his dues if I wasn't doing this. Five deep in a van, head full of steam, hot on the heels of my neon dreams, maybe coming true, living this life just like I was born to do. School, and what would you do? you weren't doing this.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.